Tony, we want to thank you for being with us. Hizbullah, Hamas contain the rise and pacification of Palestinian resistance. And that does it for our show. Special thanks to Democracy Now! Correspondent Sharifa Belkadut in Gaza. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is Don Letts from Big Audio Dynamite. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Go ahead, London.
Yes, that's right. You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's just after 6 o'clock time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hey, what's up?
Well, what's up? What's, have you looked up? Have you looked up in the sky? My God, what's going on out there?
It's very dark, very ominous cloud cover.
It's Dorothy Gale weather, you know. That's her full name, right, from Wizard of Oz? The tornado. In fact, that's a tornado warning. If you're in Connecticut right now, or Massachusetts, apparently there are tornadoes heading your way, so be careful. Meaning, get out of whatever it is you're in, go underground, or I don't know what to do in a tornado. We don't have tornadoes here.
It was very hot and humid earlier early in the afternoon, and now I think it just was the perfect thing, recipe to sort of collide. I'm not sure the exact science of it, but it's just this enormous front of cloud cover, and I guess that heat interfacing with the moisture is coming down from those clouds now. So
it's raining, yeah. It's
brace
raining
yourselves.
So it's got I like weather. Thunderstorm, supposedly quarter-size hail. No diamonds from the sky yet.
Not yet.
No, we're watching Lost in Space, and that's pretty cool. It's weather to be cautious of. So just keep an eye out. Drive carefully if you're on the road, because just assume everybody else doesn't know what they're doing, which isn't so far from the truth, and just be careful.
Visibility could be low, so use your headlights, all that sort of common sense advice.
Right. And we might even be here a little bit later, too, because Finn is on a bicycle heading over here now, and he might be delayed a little bit.
Is he bringing Toto?
He rides his bike in from Nassau County every week.
Oh.
A lot of people don't know this. Finn is he's probably our most athletic person on the station. Also probably one of our most insane people on the station, because neither rain nor shine or whatever, he's got a saying that he always manages.
I hear it's a recumbent tall bike, but I don't know.
It is, actually. We probably shouldn't be giving out such specific information, but if you see somebody riding a tall bike down the middle of Jericho Turnpike, and that's another thing, he insists on using the middle and not the shoulders. Something to do with it's his right. I don't know, but just give him leeway, because you will lose in the battle. I'll tell you that right now. You will lose.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have all kinds of things to talk about tonight. Actually, we have some issues that we want to get off our chest. I've got issues. You've got issues. We might as well just dive right into it, because we only have an hour, or we might have a little bit more. In which case, we'll find more issues. I've been hearing some disturbing things in various parts of the world, but let's focus on your original part of the world, the Great Northwest.
Yeah, the Pacific Northwest,
beautiful city of Seattle,
Puget Sound area, absolutely, King County, specifically the city of Seattle has made a bit of national news over what is I think referred to as a head tax.
If you have a head, you pay a tax. That seems fair.
Right, exactly. Especially if that head is employed by a very, very large corporation headquartered in the city of Seattle.
Headquartered? Head tax. It's so easy, anybody can do it.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the argument is that, at least the way I see it, is for these companies benefiting, probably getting incentive and other perks with the quality of life and popularity of a city like Seattle, for new and emerging tech, for all those benefits, that they should contribute something a little extra, because the city itself has a increasingly troublesome problem with homelessness and is suffering a lot of, I guess, what you would call a socioeconomic dichotomy and sprawl. And it's really not ready for it, if you know anything about the housing in the area. So that's my kind of overview of
it. Okay, so basically, I might have misspoken then. It's the people who own the heads aren't the ones paying the taxes. It's the people that hire the heads.
Correct.
The big corporations. So
because they're drawing people for this work with the allure of the lifestyle or what... whatnot, and can afford to pay them to move there, and then they then displace and cause, I think, some of the values and living situations to change, which is good. I mean, transformation is good in cities. They need this growth.
Well, Seattle has changed quite a bit over the past number of years because of the influx of companies like Amazon, Starbucks, even Microsoft, although they're not technically in Seattle. But you have all this, rents are going up, right? You would say that. So kind of like the San Francisco syndrome where things get out of people's reach. And you have, a lot of homeless people. When I was there last, I was struck by that, the encampments, people living outside, and not just, the kind of people you might think live outside, but families, young people, old people. People just can't afford to live in that place anymore. Through no fault of their own, it's just things have gotten so out of hand. And the thought behind this head tax, which I believe was suggested at $500 a person, $500 a head, is to put some money back into that problem that is, as far as I see, a direct result of the prosperity brought in by these companies. At first when it was mentioned, $500 a head, I noticed that the big companies were objecting to this, and $500, whether is that $500 a week, $500 a month? No, it's $500 a year. And I run a business, and if I was told I have to pay an extra $500 per employee per year, maybe I wouldn't be thrilled about it, but it's not something that is crippling for sure. And if I have a company with say 10 people, that's 500 times 10. I'd have to ask the accountant how much that is. That's one of the employees. But it's a nominal amount. But if you have 1,000 employees, obviously it's a lot more. But if you have 1,000 employees, you're making a lot more. So the number is basically fixed. It's the same. $500 a year does not seem like that much. But now I'm told that it's not even that much.
That's right. They capitulated because of pressure from these companies. And I would just add that, presumably at 1,000 people, your footprint, both as a company and then the home life, that employment would beget is also a bit larger, and that is the reason for it. So if your middle management employee, Becky, gets all, icky grossed out when she sees, totally crusty homeless people on her way to the club.
Becky don't like that.
Yeah. Poor Becky could maybe know that her employer is paying a little bit because Becky is there and, displacing and raising the cost of living because the expectation of a nice area for the employees to reside is presumed. Becky, by virtue of just being there, would be paying for this, albeit from the employer rather than her personal funds, but it would go towards her having a less icky experience and the people being there maybe having a little more opportunity, and it really is just a tiny, tiny bit. I will say, the city of Seattle is not without fault, and I would say from a civil engineering and overall city management perspective, their track record is not great when it comes to planning infrastructure, funding infrastructure. They have funded more lunches and environmental studies and assessments than they have, I think, real infrastructure. Taking decades-long approval processes to create simple things. Also, you have to remember, and this is where I get on my soapbox, the background is there is zero income tax in Washington.
Wait, whoa. Hold on. Everyone stop. What? No income
zero.
Tax?
You Zippity-doo-dah.
But.
Zero.
You know how much
what Rudy said?
Yeah, he did say that. He looks in the mirror every day and says that. No, so we pay income tax here, Kyle.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
Every man, woman, and child. Well, okay. Basically, we pay income tax.
What's that like?
It's a lot of money. It's more than $500. I'll tell you that right now. And again, it's not even $500. What, they brought it down to $275?
Right. So, $375, I think.
No, $275 is what I'm seeing right in front of me.
What it ended up at?
Yeah, so now, okay, who's complaining the loudest about this?
So the two entities, and the other thing I would reiterate is that this is happening, this is history repeating. Companies that have thrived there, you mentioned Microsoft, and I would also say Boeing. They don't have headquarters there anymore. Their headquarters is in Chicago. interesting how that changed. But they weren't even ever headquartered in Seattle proper. They have a nice sliver, a cushy sliver of land that creeps up into south downtown Seattle near Boeing Field. However, it is the city, technically the city of Tukwila. Microsoft is not in Redmond, headquartered in Redmond, for their health or for, you know, just random happenstance. They knew, and I would say are not there for, you know, mysterious reasons. They saw the entanglement of being involved with the city of Seattle, and it's not unlikely that Redmond is where they're headquartered and that they have thrived there. I believe they found something about that situation that was better than trying to deal with the city of Seattle. So if that's also a background I would like to caveat, that this is, you know, this is repeating from past experience. Now the big players, perhaps not those companies, we're just changing names, really. It's the same scenario, except these companies are actually in the city of Seattle, which would be Starbucks and Amazon. Both of these are the loudest that are against this, from what I've seen in the coverage. I'm not abreast on every bit of it, and I am still looking into groups that are against it, that are resisting this pushback, because those companies are being selfish. They are doing very, very well.
As you speak, I'm reading about this, and there's a story about Amazon objecting loudly to this. I mean, Amazon really is objecting loudly to having to pay $275 per employee per year because they are benefiting from being in Seattle. And they even say right here, look at this statement. Amazon said it's being forced to question future growth in the city and noted that revenue was increasing quicker than the population increase. Okay, if revenue is increasing quicker, then that kind of you're kind of making the argument that, we have so much money now. How about giving some of that back to the community? That is it too strong to say they're decimating the community? When I see a lot of people homeless, you know, that can't afford rents because of all the influx of technical workers and office buildings going up, yeah, I think they should give back. I think in most other countries they would be required to give back to to balance the scales a little bit. Yeah, things are great for Amazon, things are great for Starbucks, but they need to be great for the people amongst whom you live with.
Absolutely. And two other really important points to this would be that the rent in general is illegal in Washington State.
Rent is illegal?
Rent control policies are illegal.
Wait, okay, hold on. Everyone stop again.
So
Hold on. So wait, you're saying now that the no income tax and rent control is illegal?
What? It is. In the legislation, you cannot have rent control anywhere in Washington State. This is another huge, huge factor in this, because you're talking about homelessness. Now, granted, when I was growing up, maybe 10, 20 years ago, I would say the homelessness was there, but there was also a seasonal attribute to it. It's not like that anymore. There is a constant of homelessness in Seattle, a huge constant. Now you can name what the draw might be. You could blame it on pot. You could blame it on a lot of things. Quality of life in general there.
How about global warming, where it's warmer in the winters?
Exactly. It's nicer. Seattle's well on its way to having LA type weather all the time. It's not as rainy as you think. Last time we were there, forest fires.
Remember
were a big
last
deal.
Year? I thought I was in Los Angeles and I was actually in Seattle. I got very confused.
We pretty much had smog from BC fires. Again, a climate factor. But just to wrap that up, I would just say that it is increased, and this bringing in of people creates a market for condominiums, and then those properties that were less expensive become further from the central parts of downtown. And my point is that that displacement is shifting a lot of the lower income. You know, you're not having that the availability of affordable housing. And I'm not even now talking about people who are straight up homeless, people who just can't afford to live in Seattle. many artists, many of the really cool communities in Seattle, the things that make it great, that make it an interesting draw.
And these are the people who made it great in the first
absolutely.
Place.
Absolutely. Those folks are having to find alternatives. A lot of them are, you know, finding work elsewhere, maybe traveling a lot. You know, maybe they visit New York every now and then. You know, maybe they are in California or Portland.
Portland, yeah, that's a solution for some people for now until you know the corporations discover Portland. They do the same thing there.
You mentioned San Francisco. This even fall-on effects of a place like Southern California becoming harder to, you know, less affordable, a lot of entrepreneurs don't like the VC culture in California anyway. Mm-hmm. They'd rather start their company in Seattle and be away from that shallow, vapid, nasal crap that is in Southern California. I mean,
no offense to our California listeners.
We're
not talking about you.
Enjoy yourselves. Don't fall off the continent. But I absolutely would attribute the sort of toxic culture in California tech to many people choosing to migrate to Seattle and Portland and other areas, homeless or not. You know, whether you're a tech bro or holding a sign on a freeway entrance, there's residual effects for other cities that are displacing people. They then send others to places like Seattle, which again, it takes up space. It takes up the inadequate housing and unregulated housing. So what happens then, and this is the last point I'll make, is that the people who are looking for housing become further flung from Seattle. And if you know anything about transit in Seattle, it's nascent, it's emerging, it's pathetic. Our buses are great, our light rail's great, but if you know anyone that lives in Seattle and you live 20 minutes away, you will never see them leave Seattle. Mm-hmm. They like to be downtown fabulous, they like to be in their little bubble, their little Amazon orb, and anywhere that is like a hassle to get to that might involve traffic is like another country. So you could be in an outlying city, you could be in Tacoma, you could be in these other parts of Washington, but never really interact with people from Seattle because they like to just coalesce there and perch. The problem, though, is your artists, the people that are making an interesting place, are getting pushed out into places that have horrible housing. I'm talking terrible landlords, the worst apartments and condominiums, mm-hmm. the crappiest buildings. I mean, just awful stuff that is way overpriced and puts you in a relative ghetto compared to the dilettantes in Seattle. So that's what's going on.
Yeah.
So you then have further physical dichotomy from a town that already can't see past its own city limits.
Yeah, and you mentioned mass transit. You know, they're building mass transit. They're expanding the light rail, but you know that Sounder train, really cool looking train. I wish our trains were nice and colorful like that one, but it doesn't run very often.
It only runs at night.
Only runs in the rush hours in one direction. Maybe there's one train going the other way, one train all day. And doesn't run at all on the weekends. I mean, come on. It's a city. For God's sake, you got to do better than that. We're spoiled in New York because 24 hours, it's always working. But I don't see why other cities can't do that, too. And when you do that, that changes the whole culture, and you have people doing more things in more places if they can get there. When I travel overseas, I always meet up with this midnight, or in the case of Bucharest, 11 p.m. deadline when mass transit turns off. Everyone has to get home by then or deal with Ubers and cabs, and it affects what you do. It affects how you know, social you are or where you go.
Or stodgy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if you turn off things at a certain time, that's controlling the population. We don't need to do that. And I think many cities in this country would benefit greatly from expanding.
And basically, these companies are really missing a leadership opportunity. And what then happens, the effect is real haphazard growth. And you're going to get icky reactions from Becky, who has to walk by homeless people. And you'll never solve these problems. So go talk to Becky and make sure her icky commute.
Lay off Becky. Becky's going to email us. And Becky, I'm sorry. Brian can take it. But Becky, you know, Come on. She came here from Iowa. And she doesn't talk like that either. Anyone named Becky who's listening, we're sorry.
I get the
and also I think Amazon just canceled delivery to me too. I think Look, Amazon, what we're saying to you is that you got to give back. We're saying the same thing to Starbucks. Dick's apparently now this is not the Dick's Sporting Goods, who are super cool because they're not selling assault rifles anymore, and I think they're melting down the ones that they have in stock instead of selling them to somebody else, and they're being met with boycotts from gun manufacturers, which to me is a good thing because that just means they're selling less guns. But you know, I really want to support Dick's Sporting Goods because of their conscientious stand there, and if people can't get that, yeah, you're the problem. You don't understand what it is to live in a civilized society where we don't have these kinds of things. But there's another Dick's apparently in Seattle. You know something about these Dick's?
Yeah, we have a shopping list for Dick's Sporting Goods because we're going to support them. But the Dick's in Seattle is a drive-in. It's of historical significance. If you know Sir Mix-a-Lot, he had an album cover photographed in their parking lot.
Uh-huh.
He's got songs about them. Dick's is on Broadway and also Northeast 45th. They've been there forever. They're essentially a burger joint, walk up, you know, iconic, I guess, for Seattle as a fast food place.
But they don't want to pay $275 a year per employee.
I am super sorry that they feel that way. Again, it is the larger vision, I think, for Seattle. Perhaps they could be advocating for some kind of scale or exception or something, but you know what? If they're going to be completely digging in, or this will ruin Dick's, I'll be happy to go to Tacoma to visit Frisco Freeze. Their burgers are okay too, and you know, Five Guys is in Seattle now too. And you know, they would probably give Dick's a run for their money. So there are options.
But they're
if
not
Dick's
headquartered
wants to
there.
Do
that,
this.
The thing is, they're not headquartered there. So Dick's, if you want to get out of it, just headquarter yourself somewhere else, and then you know. But places like Amazon and Starbucks, they thrive on that Seattle connection, and they're just being asked to give back a little bit. So in 2 weeks when Starbucks is closed for racial sensitivity, and if you can get in there, maybe you could spread some messages about how about giving back to the community as well in other ways, you know, this whole ugly episode can be put behind us.
Yeah.
Be nice.
Gosh, landlords. Look at rental. I mean, it's like, I saw someone post the other day a rental in Washington. It was like the amenities were park and live. It was really funny. It's like, that's it.
Uh-huh.
And then go to work.
Yeah, no, I saw a house, I think it might have been in Seattle, it might have been in the Bay Area, and it's sad that I can't tell the difference anymore, but it was selling for $1 million, and it was really not a nice house. It was like, a, you know, in the middle of a development with houses right next to it, but that was selling for $1 million, and people were commenting saying, yeah, you know, don't show pictures of houses in Baltimore or the East Coast that also sell for $1 million because you're just making people on the West Coast very depressed.
Yeah, I mean,
how ridiculous is that?
It's no joke. They'll sift through Craigslist. Look at what's for rent. Look at what practical options you would have there, and really think about how inspiring that would be, how unattainable it is for a lot of people. Anyway,
so how can people stay up to date on all this?
I'm not exactly sure. I'm embarrassed to say I'm still looking into this situation. I just heard about it a little bit ago. I would look on Seattle's Reddit page, look at some of the commentary there. You're going to get a lot of, I think, resources from people that are posting there. Also, links to stories. That would be the best place is the Seattle Reddit thread. I would look at some of the organizations and council members, see what groups they're communicating with and are supporting their stance. I know the Seattle City Council has really come out swinging with this, and I hope they are able to forge ahead in the face of this pushback.
Yeah, absolutely. So look for head tags in Google News or something, and I'm sure you'll find all kinds of stories about that. Interesting, and thanks for bringing that to our attention, Kyle. It's good to know, and something we should keep in mind here in the East Coast as well.
Work to be done.
Yeah. Now, also, just to update people, there still is an intensive storm moving into the northeast, especially north of us, Connecticut, Massachusetts. In fact, I'm reading a headline now. It says the intense storm that's heading this way or is in this neck of the woods now might become a derecho. Have you ever heard that word before? Is that even how it's pronounced?
I have no idea what
it's
that
spelled
means.
D-E-R-E-C-H-O. Okay. And, okay, the headline says, here's what that means. Hang on one second. Intense winds, heavy rainfall, hail expected. Risk for damaging winds expected to continue, become potentially widespread. Okay, derechos. I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing that right, although I don't know who would know. Derechos can be devastating storms. The word Spanish for straight ahead, wow, that's kind of cool, was coined in 1888 by meteorologist Gustavo Hinrichs to distinguish storms producing winds in a straight line that knock down trees and buildings in the same direction from storms that produce rotating winds that cause tornadoes. So I guess it's kind of like a tornado that doesn't spin. Wow. A derecho storm system is also distinctly wide and fast-moving, causing wind damage from more than 250 miles, which is larger than the diameter of most hurricanes. Gusts pushing faster than 58 miles per hour along most of its length. So you might get a derecho warning on your phone. Don't ignore it.
No, absolutely.
I learned something today.
Keep your wits about you.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, well, the thing I want to talk about tonight is what happened yesterday, the disgusting, vile chain of events that we saw taking place in the Middle East, namely Israel's massacre of at least 55 people in the Gaza Strip, wounding 2,000 others. And all this while the United States is celebrating the opening of a new embassy a few miles away in Jerusalem. You could not get more diametrically opposed images. Literally, I've seen news stations with the massacre on one side of the screen and the wine and cheese on the other side, completely oblivious to what was going on. And, you know, the Trump administration shares blame in this. In fact, almost entirely responsible for this. It's the 70th anniversary of when the Palestinians lost their land. But it's also the occupation of this particular sensitive bit of land. Jerusalem, always considered to be the capital for the Palestinian people as well as for the Israelis, but to move in at this stage, particularly on a sensitive anniversary, is really, really insensitive. Does nothing for the peace process, and as you can see, causes all kinds of chaos. And to simply look at this and say, well, you know what, they're gonna have to deal with it, that's the way it is, it's just a height of callousness. There's no other word for it. It's like when Ariel Sharon visited Holy Ground in the year, I believe, 2000, and started the Second Intifada in that area. Everybody knew what was going to happen. Everybody knew that, technically you have the right to do that, but if you do that, you're going to cause all kinds of chaos and mayhem. That's exactly what happened. Did nothing to advance peace, and simply convinced the rest of the world that, you know what, the Israelis don't really want peace. At least these ones don't. And we saw the same thing again yesterday. Think about it. Think about what's going on here. You have people living in Gaza, and Gaza, you know, Long Island is many times bigger than Gaza. Think about that. Gaza's about the size of Detroit, Philadelphia, cities like that. That's it. That's everything. People are penned in there like they're in some kind of a schoolyard, okay? And they're surrounded by fences, and their water supply is controlled by Israel, their electricity controlled by Israel, anything that goes in or out. They basically are living in a prison. And if you try this out, take a bunch of people, have them live in a prison for a number of years, and see how productive they wind up being. See how positive and how happy they are. Odds are they won't be very happy. Odds are they'll be pretty angry and hostile. So don't act surprised when they're burning tires and saying, you know, we're sick of this. We've got nothing to lose anymore. And, you know, we're going to voice our outrage. Now, add to that what happened yesterday, where Israeli snipers killed 55 people, wounded 2,000 others, and how many Israelis were hurt? Zero. Not one. Now, the logic, the twisted logic that you will always see, it works no matter what happens, okay? To them, it works no matter what happens. If a single Israeli gets injured or killed, then obviously we need to clamp down on these people because look at what they're doing. And if a single Israeli does not get killed, does not get injured, well, it worked. We have to keep these people down. And the fact that nobody got injured means that we're doing the right thing. You can't convince them that there's any other way to act. So treating these people like animals, treating them like prisoners who aren't even human, is the norm. And that's got to stop. What we saw yesterday was simply horrible. It was a crime against humanity. And the fact that our government refuses to even blame Israel in any way for killing all these people, they blame Hamas. They blame the... they're not nice people, I will grant you that. But you know what? You kind of created them. You kind of made their existence necessary by pushing people into a corner, not giving them any options. Hamas was democratically elected. You don't like it? That's the way it is. I don't like the way it is in this country with a democratic election, but I have to deal with it, all right? And that is basically the rule. Israel doesn't play by the rules. They play by their own rules, and we simply keep backing them up no matter what. That has to stop. That absolutely has to stop, because we cannot have this continuing. And there doesn't seem to be any end in sight, and we just will see things like this happen over and over and over again. Now, not a single Palestinian breached the border. And remember, this is a border that separates Gaza from Israel proper. Not one made it past the fence. They were all shot in their own territory. Think about that. They shot a guy with no legs in a wheelchair. They killed him. How much of a threat are these people? Okay, so think about this. Let's say they did breach the barrier. They did make it past the fence. All right, what are we saying now? You know, even the Israelis are saying these were innocent people. But it's Hamas's fault because they basically told these innocent people to have a demonstration. You know, basically, blame anybody but us. All right, so these are innocent people. They were victims of Hamas, not of us. We shot them, yes, but we shot them because Hamas told them to burn tires, and we don't like that, and we couldn't see them, so we shot everywhere. Yeah, okay, whatever. Whatever, you shot innocent people. I'm sorry, just getting really emotional thinking about all this. Let's say those innocent people made it across the border, and they're now in Israeli territory. What do you think would happen? I mean, imagine a crowd of people running towards a border and breaching the border. You know, it's happened in Europe. It's happened in various places. These are human beings. What do you think they're going to do? You think immediately as soon as they're in this territory, they're going to start killing everybody in their sight like some kind of robot. That's what you think is going to happen. These are families, men, women, children, people in wheelchairs. Okay, they breach the border. It's not the worst thing in the world if it happens. So here they are. They're in your territory. They're all spread out. What do you think is going to happen? And the fact that people are so afraid of these other individuals that they demonize them in this way and make them into, you know, completely psychotic villains, that is really scary. That is dehumanizing. And to make that normal is just so incredibly detrimental and unhealthy and does not speak well for the future. That has to change. You know, the other thing that really bugged me about this, just watching it play out yesterday, and we all knew it was going to play out. You know, I was looking at the international news the day before, and they were saying, there's going to be bloodshed. There is going to be tremendous bloodshed because the Israelis are promising they will shoot all these people, and they're opening the embassy, and people are going to react against that. It's inevitable. They all knew it was going to happen. Everybody knew this was going to happen. The American media, when this was happening yesterday, largely ignored the situation. In fact, this is something You know, I spend a lot of time attacking Trump policies and Trump personalities and things like that. This is something that goes well beyond that. This is something that affects the Democratic Party. It affects the mass media. It affects our mainstream in so many ways. Entertainment industry, you name it. They turn a blind eye to Israel so many times. It's pathetic. Yesterday, the New York Times reported the story in this way. They said over 50 Palestinians have died in a demonstration against Israeli policy or whatever they refer to it as. Have died. Think about how passive a statement that is. 50 Palestinians, they just all of a sudden keeled over. They all just died. No, they didn't just die. They were massacred. They were shot. They were mowed down. You know, I mean, the New York Times, I expect so much better from them. I expect so much better from so many media sources, and virtually all of them let me down yesterday. Watching CNN, breaking news. Boy, they love their breaking news. And the breaking news was Melania Trump is having a kidney operation. I don't care about Melania Trump's damn kidney. I honestly don't care at all. She's got health insurance. I'm sure she'll be fine. Whatever. Doesn't matter. There are so many other people that are more important. And this is one story that is infinitely more important. Wasn't even reported on for another 10 minutes because we had to learn all about Melania Trump's damn kidney. That was too much. And that's on CNN. Imagine what Fox is doing. They're having a whole kidney hour, probably. Who knows? These are human beings. These are people. Individual people. And if we were in their position, we would be doing the exact same thing, if not far more. And, you know, the justification, they always try to turn this around. They always say, well, you know what, all you have to do, we talked about this last week in regard to African Americans, all you had to do was order something at Starbucks, follow the police officer's commands, you know, stop sneaking around and, you know, basically trying to blame the victim all the time. Yeah, well, you know, you Palestinians, if only you would stop firing those rockets into Israel. Yeah, that's all you have to do. Do you think maybe, if you look at the situation that happened yesterday, this explains why they fire rockets into Israel? And, you know, if I lived over there, I'd want to fire everything imaginable into Israel after seeing what they did to my friends and family. And when you consider this has been going on in one form or another since the 1940s, yeah, there's a lot of ingredients for continued hostility. So you can't just say that, Israel did this in response, in retaliation for that. Which came first? Which came first? How do you define that? Everything is a reaction to something else. And the way our media has covered this is shameful. The way our administration is handling this is criminal. And it's time that we speak up, that we not be afraid, because this is something they really do make you feel afraid to do. They say you cannot criticize this country. Absolutely not. Uh-uh. They are beyond criticism. Well, when South Africa withdraws their ambassador, and South Africa knows a thing or two about injustice, when they withdraw their ambassador from Israel, we all should pay attention.
Yeah. I would say that we are definitely in the midst of a media framing blitz. Or just a lack of coverage, but it was really abhorrent. And I think Israel is absolutely belligerent. They are drunk off their perception of American support for this. And probably for good reason. We're selling them the weapons that are being used to poke the people that are being cornered. And, you know, in a lot of ways, the American people are paying for this. You know, we pay for the kinds of coordination and support and armament and that kind of thing through these little, security arrangements and, you know, support, this long-standing support that Netanyahu loves to cite and was right there citing during the opening of this embassy. were at any other place, it would look a target with this kind of genocide, this level. And I think Israel should be a lot more careful about U.S. autonomy, because our support could change, and especially if this escalates.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's up to us as people to demand better of our representatives, to not simply follow because that's all they know how to do.
Yeah.
We need to know some of the history ourselves, because when you look at it, it is so tragic, so completely unfair. You know, we've been talking about North and South Korea, and, you know, we were talking about this ourselves. So many people don't know this. Why? Why is there a North and South Korea? You know, do you know that they didn't break apart? They were broken apart. After World War II, basically the victors divided Korea in half. Now, Korea was occupied by Japan. They weren't aggressors in any way. But to placate the Soviet Union, a northern section was created. To placate the United States, a southern section was created. That's it. That's how the country was divided. That's why North and South Korea exist. Nothing to do with the Korean people. And, yeah, there were conflicts afterwards because of these artificial states that were set up. Well, kind of similar to what happened here. Do you know that Palestine was a British territory up until 1948? And the United Nations decided in one of its first actions that this Palestine would be divided into two independent countries, Israel and Palestine. Now, keep in mind, this was shortly after the Holocaust. There was, you know, all kinds of feelings of we have to do something. This, you know, we've been to hell, and we need to start making up for this somehow. And many people were driven by that, and I wouldn't even say incorrectly so. The desire, you know, to fix a scourge that has been with us, mainly anti-Semitism, for centuries, this seemed like maybe a way of dealing with it, maybe a way of somehow starting to make up for the horrors that we had just been through. But there's a problem with that. There are people that were already there. And you can look at the Bible, you can look at religious history, you can do all kinds of things and justify it, but reality has to kick in at some point, too. And you have to say, okay, this is what the prophecy says, this is what the historical books say, but what is the situation right now? And the situation at that point was that there were people there, and Arab leaders basically rejected that declaration. And there was a conflict. There was a conflict. And when that conflict was ended, Israel controlled even more of the land than the UN declaration had given them. And the Gaza Strip was one of those areas that the Palestinians were able to maintain control of. Then there was another war in 1967. Israel occupied the Gaza Strip as well. And you can point to all kinds of conflicts, invasions, hostilities that occurred since 1948. And in each case, Israel just kept getting stronger and stronger, while forgetting about the original change that was made that basically dislocated so many people. And that has never been fixed. And all that has happened in the decade since is that the finger has been pointed at the various uncoordinated Arab countries and aborted attempts to get land back, saying that these people don't want peace, that these people are anti-Israel, that, you know, we're just fighting to maintain our existence. And, you know, there is some truth in that. I can see that to a degree, until you look at the formation in the first place and how that was done unfairly, and how there has never really been an attempt to make things up in a way that might actually satisfy people. Basically, just a lot of conditions. We'll give you something if you stop doing this or stop saying that. Meanwhile, so many violations on the Israeli side, mainly settlers who occupy places that they weren't supposed to occupy, and now we're supposed to just forget about that. More people dislocated. You kind of understand why there's such anger, why there's such hostility, because it never seems to go the other way.
Yeah, I mean, that was like decades of a rush to settle, a rush to encourage people to move there, to grow, and essentially mm-hmm. outnumber the original communities and encroach and continue to grow and grow and grow as a way to substantiate your claim. We outnumber you, therefore. And I think that cannot be discounted, because that then means you have to physically locate people, and you just increase this settlement size, further displacing. It compounds that displacement, that original displacement, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, the thing is, the founding of Israel, great idea, just very poorly executed. You know, you have to consider other people, and we're basically living through that error over all this time, and we keep coming back to it. Those people aren't going away. They're not, and you keep pushing them into more and more desperate situations, and it's just going to last all the longer. It's really, really sad and tragic, and something needs to change. Something on their side really needs to change, and I'm seeing no evidence of that. I'm seeing no desire to do that, and certainly with people like Trump and Pence in charge, we're not going to see that anytime soon. We will see a reaction to this. You know, because, you know, imagine this happening to you know, your family, you know, your community. This is the kind of thing that can last for decades, centuries even. And people are very short-sighted. They're not thinking about all this.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty picture. It's a brazen facade, but it's still only a facade. It's not... The truth will beget what it will as far as a result, but there really has to be a substantial effort and less of this sort of brazenness. Again, for people demonstrating, this is how we just started the discussion, demonstrating approaching a border and standing up for their human rights, their right to exist.
Their right not to be treated like prisoners, like animals, you know, their right to have a decent lifestyle. And that's incumbent upon all of us to make sure they get that. And we're not, you know, you treat people like criminals, they will become criminals. You treat people like animals, they will do things that disgust you. This is what Israelis are doing to people in this prison yard that they've created. And it needs to stop. That is the first thing that needs to stop. Yeah, there are all kinds of things on the other side you can point to that are also wrong. But this by far is the wrongest thing.
And I think another thing that's worth pointing out is the characterization of these people who just, you know, are standing up for dignity, the characterization of their movement or statehood as terrorists. And dehumanizing them with that language. We've seen that used to some degree post 9/11, of course, in the U.S. With, I think, less physical harm, but no less discrimination in various ways. Here you have a theocracy, right, a religious state committing violence across a border, right, at the fence, you know, in the name of that religion, that ideology. I mean, that's sort of the definition of terrorism, you know, and it's just interesting how it's framed as defensive, but it is in fighting for a religious purpose mm-hmm. with violence, that is essentially terrorism.
I you make a good point here, because imagine if the tables were turned, if 55 Israelis were killed in actions yesterday, how much news coverage would that be getting? And just the fact that Israel's way of dealing with things, for every one of our people, we will kill seven of your people, basically saying, yeah, we're superior to you, as human beings as well. That kind of thing is wrong. They're every bit as important as you are. Every bit. And you have to start realizing that and treating them in that way.
or if they woke up and realized that the U.S. could be saying that, mm-hmm. or any other state, Russia could be saying that. What if someone came and regulated on them over this and said, we will do 10 times as much as you do to defend yourself over this genocide, or whatever it is? There's a lot of hypotheticals here, and I think there's some serious short-sightedness in how this appears globally. And you cannot frame inequity and something as violent and I think misguided as the way people are being treated, the dehumanizing, without some I think effect or impact and observations from others. I
right.
mean, we are not the only ones that are seeing this. It's just a shame that it isn't being communicated.
And, you know, we need to be critical. We need to be allowed to be critical on this, and that is something that we are told we are not supposed to be. That is the cause of this problem. Israel has to account for itself. They cannot be given a free pass all the time. Whenever the UN Security Council brings something up, we're there to say, no, we're not going to talk about this. They can get away with it. Now, at least under Obama, there was some, you know, it still wasn't enough, but at least there was some expectation of acting civilized. And even that was too much for the leadership of Israel to handle. And they would say that we can't allow this. Obama is anti-Israel, which is complete nonsense. You can be anti-Israel, certainly without anti-Israeli government, without being anti-Israel, and certainly not anti-Semitic. There are just all kinds of things. We can continue talking about this for hours, but Finn has arrived on his tall bike, so we are going to have to go. But I do want to leave with one thing, because this is the thing that people don't want us to talk about. Now, you know, a situation like this where you see a mass carnage, where you see executions like you saw yesterday, there needs to be a reckoning, as we have been saying. We need to hurt those people that do this thing, whether it's economically, whether it's through the justice system, however. And the one thing we know that hurts, because we see the reaction against it by those same people, is the BDS movement. That is the boycott against Israeli policy, against the people that are doing these things. And you will find people, Democrats, Republicans, all try to attack the people who are pushing this, saying, no, it's illegal to boycott Israel. Well, it's not. Okay, you can draw up how many laws you want. It's not illegal to voice your opinion through your wallet if you feel that is the way to express yourself. And we know this is the way that works because people are so upset at it. So because of this, I am encouraging people to go to the website, which, by the way, took a really long time to load. I don't know if it's being flooded with users or attacked, but the website is bdsmovement.net. And there you will find all kinds of ways you can get involved. Now, when we put economic pressure on Israel to stop this crap and to rejoin civilized nations and work out the issues, then the pressure can be relieved. Deal with this like you deal with any rogue state, because what they're doing right now is acting like a rogue state. And our government is not going to do anything. We know that. They are enemies of the Palestinian people as much as any enemy is right now. That will change at some point. We hope that will change at some point. For now, the power is in your hands as citizens, individual people that can spread the word on social media. And by going to bdsmovement.net and reading all about how to get involved, what you can do, you can start applying that pressure. You can start making a difference. It is essential. There is no other way right now. You cannot rely on your elected officials. You cannot rely on the media. You cannot rely on anyone who currently runs the show. Unless, you know, seeing people gunned down like this in cold blood is something you're willing to get used to. Because I'm not, and I think most of us are disgusted by this. This is time for us to react, to do something as civilized people. Now, if you have suggestions, feedback, by all means, share it with us. We'll share it with people next week. otw@2600.com is our email address. I'm sure there's all kinds of strong opinions about this, but I don't think anything we said is inaccurate or wrong. You know, we are supportive of people living peacefully no matter where they happen to be. But that has to apply evenly. That has to apply to everybody.
Yeah, we can't just have like sort of this fashion of Islamophobia be something that we're that's exploited and that you know, we're so easily gotten over because that seems to be the popular sentiment, and it's wrong, and it isn't a rational way to look at the issues.
Well, we're out of time. Finn is here, so he'll be bringing you all kinds of cool stuff in the next couple of hours. We will be back next week, and let us know what's on your mind. Good night.
Look how I'm geeking up. I'm so pretty. I'm on Gucci. I'm so pretty. I'm on get it. This is belly. Ooh. On my Kodak. Black. Ooh, know that. Plug on with a hopper.
Whoa,
they gonna find you like fucker.
Blow. Ooh, America. I just checked my follow and listen. You motherfucker told me.
Firing.